ladies and gentlemen. Welcome again to another edition of Liberty Unbridled. I am your host, Ken Molman, and we are here on Sunday night, as we are on almost every Sunday night, 7 p.m. Eastern Time, to bring you the Liberty news from around the Commonwealth and the country, things that affect your life. And we've got a pretty good slate of things here to talk about tonight, and I want to apologize ahead of time, folks. I am pretty well thoroughly exhausted. It's been one heck of a couple of weeks here, and just kind of wiped out, so bear with me. We've got plenty to talk about, and if you'd like to call in tonight, the number here is area code 858-683-1326. Again, 858-683-1326. And if you call in to speak about anything, be sure to hit 1 so I know that you want to speak, because otherwise I have no idea that you want to speak, and, well, then you won't get to speak. So, getting right to it here, I guess starting off with a little bit of news, there was an article in the Kentucky Inquirer this week, I guess it was actually today, I believe, that the Northern Kentucky Independent Health District, we have a health district up here in Northern Kentucky, is not going to make any moves in the wake of the Bullitt County ongoing legal battle with the smoking ban that was imposed by the health department in Bullitt County. They, for those that may not have caught that previous show, the health department is a body that is primarily appointed out of Frankfort, out of the Cabinet for Health and Family Services. It is not locally appointed. The judge exec gets, I believe, 2 votes on the committee, but the rest of the board all comes out of Frankfort, and so the rest of the board has an overwhelming presence or voice on that board. And so Frankfort, the folks that were appointed out of Frankfort, have implemented a smoking ban against the wishes of the local county and city elected officials. And that's now gone through first round, was won by those who opposed the ban. The second round now in the Court of Appeals has been won by those that support the ban, 2-1 decision there. And now we're waiting to see if the Kentucky Supreme Court is going to take up this issue. I'm pretty much everyone expects them to do so, but it will not be done probably for 6 months to a year from now. So everybody's just kind of waiting to see what's going to happen. There's been a push because of this to try to get these unelected bureaucracies to drop in smoking bans in other places throughout the state. Now, in Northern Kentucky, because we have an independent health district, things are a little bit different. We actually have the judge execs that appoint, I believe, all of the positions. I don't believe Frankfort gets any real say in that, although I could be a little bit wrong on that. I have to dig back into that. But I'm pretty sure that if I've got my boards correct, you know, all these different boards are created in different ways, which is very frustrating and difficult to keep track of them all. But the Northern Kentucky Independent Health District is not making any moves to drop a smoking ban in, and, you know, were they to do so, they'd find themselves in a legal battle as well. I can just put that out there. So they're not going anywhere with it. They're leaving it alone, but something to watch out for in your local community, your county out there in the state, if you don't have a smoking ban already. You know, it's one thing to have it legislated in by an elected body. It's another thing entirely to have a smoking ban dropped in by an unelected, unaccountable bureaucracy that has basically no ties to the community whatsoever. So that's a very different issue and one we continue to watch here, but just thought that was of interest and something to bring up here. There are a number of events happening this week around the state, Liberty events, and I wanted to make sure that we kept everyone informed on these. We've got, sometimes it seems like it's difficult to keep track of them all because there's just so much going on and so many different issues, and you got to pick your battles and figure out which ones you want to support and which ones you want to do. So I guess we'll just run through kind of each and every one of these here for the next week or so. Tomorrow, Monday, the Boone County Libertarian Party has their business meeting at Shakey's in Florence off U.S. 42. If you're a Boone County resident, want to get involved in the Libertarian Party, of which I guess I should disclaim once again that I am a member of and deeply involved in, and have been a candidate for and so forth. If you want to get involved in the Libertarian Party and you live in Boone County, Monday, February 4th, Shakey's Pub and Grub on US 42, that's the place to be. On Wednesday, February 6th, there is a medical marijuana rally down in Frankfort at the Capitol Annex building, which is at 700 Capitol Avenue, and that's at 1 o'clock in the afternoon in Frankfort. It's a rally to show support for Senate Bill 11, which is also named the Gatewood-Galbraith Memorial Marijuana Bill, Gatewood-Galbraith Medical Marijuana Bill. It is, and we've talked about this a number of times on the show, my opinion that when it comes to doctors and patients, if, you know, there's something that can help someone, if a doctor, especially in these instances, many times it's terminal illness, there really shouldn't be any reason for bureaucracy or bureaucrats or elected officials to get in the way of those decisions between a doctor and their patient. And so I do support decriminalization for the purposes, especially of making it a medical issue, medical marijuana, and leaving that to doctors and patients to make that decision rather than some arbitrariness out of Frankfort. So that's February 6th at 1 o'clock in Frankfort. Thursday, February 7th, down in Lexington, the LP Libertarian Party's 6th District has their first official business meeting at 7 p.m. at Cosmic Charlie's in Lexington. It is the first meeting of the group. If you're interested in getting involved in the Libertarian Party down in the 6th District, this is the newly reformed. We've had groups down there before, but newly reformed and new leadership, new people involved, all new folks. If you'd like to get involved, you can do so. Go to Cosmic Charlie's Thursday night at 7 o'clock. And their main focus is going to be trying to spin up county parties throughout the district. So if you live in a county that's in the 6th Congressional District, or most of the county anyway, if it's split, if you want to get involved in your county, this is the opportunity to start doing so. So Thursday, February 7th there. Friday, February 8th, there is a Second Amendment rally in Triangle Park in Lexington. That's taking place at 5 o'clock. It runs until 6:15. It's a peaceful rally. It's just to show up and, support the Second Amendment and, bring signs, whatever, but do so in a way that is respectful and that is not going to cause the city to have some reason to shut it down or anything to that effect. Be good people. And, do good to support that cause. On Saturday, February 9th, we have a town hall with Thomas Massey. That's going to be in Covington at the Lookout Heights Civic Club. That's at 8:30 in the morning. And that event is hosted by the Northern Kentucky Tea Party. Thomas Massey, for those that don't know, I don't know how you don't know, but in case you don't know, is the newest member, or one of the newer members of the Kentucky delegation to the U.S. Congress. He is considered by many to be a very liberty-minded individual. And if you're interested in going to a town hall, talking with him or asking him a question, that's your opportunity to do so, is to go to that event on Saturday at 8:30 in the morning. It is, again, sponsored by the Northern Kentucky Tea Party. Donations are accepted for the event, and coffee and donuts will also be provided until they, run out. But that's that. And then the last thing I have here on the news front, we have not tomorrow, but the following Monday, February 11th, there is a committee hearing on industrial hemp at 11 a.m. in the Senate Agriculture Committee. The bill is getting tied up now. So basically what is happening here, it's scheduled to come up in the committee at 11 o'clock. After the hearing, there's going to be a rally on the steps of the Capitol where people that are on the Industrial Hemp Commission, as well as activists who have been working towards this for many, many years, will be involved in, voicing support. And, if you want to have industrial hemp made legal in the state of Kentucky and understand what this does is it creates a framework so that if the feds deregulate industrial hemp, the framework's in place to start production immediately and how the state would handle it. And that's what the current proposal does. There was an article that came out the past day or two that had Greg Stumbo speaking about how he was not sure about this, that he hadn't seen any studies, that nobody's done any studies. There have been studies done. The one that I've seen was pretty extensive, and it was out of the University of Kentucky. I forget which exact department offhand, but it's a very, very thorough document. And so it's been done. They've shown what the economic benefits would be, what the limitations would be. That information's been done. We know where that's going. And at the end of the day, industrial hemp, for those that don't know, is a plant related to marijuana. And that's where the pushback comes, is that it's related. But hemp has a lower level of THC, which is, I'm not even going to try to remember what that stands for. Most of my listeners know marijuana's not my thing. Never smoked it. Never wanted to. Don't care. It's not my thing, but I think these are all important liberty issues, which is why I bring them here. And it's just because it isn't my thing doesn't mean it's not your thing, and just because it's not my thing doesn't mean that I want to prevent other people from doing whatever. So with industrial hemp, Kentucky used to be a major producer of industrial hemp before they banned marijuana, and in doing so banned hemp. THC is the intoxicant in marijuana. It's what gives people the high. So when people smoke marijuana, they are ingesting all of it, but the thing that really gives them the buzz is known as THC. Now, THC is, it varies in levels in each plant. In fact, due to the war on drugs, new marijuana that has been put out there has been specifically bred to increase THC levels. And in many ways, the same way that tobacco has been bred to increase nicotine levels, because that's what people want, marijuana has likewise been bred to increase THC content. That's because in that scenario, you can have a smaller amount of marijuana that will create that intoxication effect that a larger quantity used to do. And that's because whenever you have a ban on something or whatever, there becomes a scarcity, and so the market reacts in that way. So the point is that THC is in all cannabis family plants, much in the same way that nicotine is in every plant of the nightshade family, which includes things like tomatoes. The difference being that with industrial hemp, the content level of THC is lower. Just like in a tomato plant. Yeah, there's nicotine in a tomato plant, but it's much, much lower than what's in tobacco. And so with industrial hemp, you have a much lower level of THC. And on top of that, a much higher level of something called CBD. That's Charlie Bravo David, CBD. And that is a substance that specifically blocks the effects of marijuana in the brain. And so industrial hemp has a lower THC content and a higher CBD content, to the point where it is literally impossible to get high off of industrial hemp. Now, my friends in the that are more in tune with this have informed me that basically this is what in the 70s they used to call ditch weed. It was, stuff that people would get, they'd buy it and find out that it didn't, get them high. And that's why, because it had a high CBD content and a low THC content. By contrast, marijuana, the goal is to have a very low CBD content and a very high THC content, relatively speaking. And so one of the things that's out there with industrial hemp. That's kind of an interesting take, is that if you were to legalize and license and allow industrial hemp to be grown statewide, it would actually be bad for the marijuana growers, because you would have cross-pollination, and you would end up with marijuana with a much lower THC and a much higher CBD content than what they were aiming for. And so just an interesting thing. That whole debate, we could spend, and we have spent a show on that before, and we should probably do that again here real soon. And, in fact, perhaps because of the lead-up to the rally, maybe I'll get someone on next week, if I can round somebody up that's not too busy, to come on and we can go over that whole issue. But industrial hemp's one that's a good one. It's good for farmers. It gives farmers an option as tobacco fades away. You know, hemp used to be our main crop. When they took hemp away, tobacco became our main crop. And now that tobacco is fading away, I firmly believe that giving farmers options is a good thing. It's not saying that all of them are going to do it. It's not saying that it will be profitable for all of them. But it gives options. It's a tool in the toolbox, as I like to say. So I believe that that is a worthy cause, something to look into. And, again, I'll try to get somebody on next week. But the rally, because by the time we do this next week, you know, if it's 7, 8 o'clock at night, your chances are good you're not going to have the ability to change your schedule for the following day. So that's why I wanted to let you all know, 11 o'clock in Frankfurt on Monday, February 11th, not tomorrow, but the following Monday, there will be a committee hearing, and then following that, a rally for industrial hemp. So if you're interested in that issue, that's it. So, man, I'll tell you, it just seems like there's so much going on, and there's always so much going on. I had a good conversation with somebody the other day, a friend of mine, and I posited the question, you know, was there always this much going on and we just didn't know it before we, you know, really got involved in this, or is it really been stepped up? And I don't know that I can answer that question because I wasn't involved before, but my guess is that there's always been a lot going on. It's just that now more and more people are waking up and more people are realizing that, hey, you know, we don't really have all the freedoms we thought we had. And, hey, wow, these guys haven't been as fiscally responsible as we'd hoped they'd been. And, you know, people are finally waking up. And so that's what's leading to increases in political activity. It's what's led to a number of political movements. And in the end, what's led to this show. So that's it's all very, very interesting to see how this goes. So let's see. In other news this week, I saw an article about more, and I don't know who this guy was, apparently some bigwig in the Republican Party, talking about the need for internal reform in the Republican Party, how they're falling more and more out of touch with the average voter, how they're going to have to start bringing on some more libertarian-esque ideals if they want to survive. And, you know, yeah, that's all pretty accurate. And I don't see any of it happening. I think that the power base, the power structure, the establishment, if you will, is entrenched in the way of doing things the way they've always done them because it's worked for them. And in doing so, they're making money off the system, make no mistake. They make money off of this, and they get power off of the way things are. And so changing the status quo is not only scary but dangerous, because not everybody who gets involved in politics makes money. I can tell you for a fact, I have never made a dime off of politics. I spend a lot of money doing what I do, and I do it because I believe it's the right thing to do. Not everybody gets involved in politics for that reason, in case you were wondering. In fact, unfortunately, most of the people that are involved on a day-to-day basis are not involved in politics for what I would say the right reason. They're involved to either, you know, gain self-worth, whether that's financial or psychological or whatever it is. They're trying to build themselves up and build an empire of some sort. And throughout the state, you'll see, you know, all these little political fiefdoms, as we call them, that exist simply to grow their own power and grow to perpetuate and expand themselves. You know, it's unfortunate because it's short-term thinking. If the Republicans were smart, they would. embrace more libertarian ideals. For that matter, if the Democrats were smart, they would embrace more libertarian ideals. You know, at our core, in each person, at our core, we have a liberty streak. Sometimes that streak is a little bit more pronounced than others. Sometimes that streak extends only as far as personally, you know, that, oh, I want liberty for myself, but I'm happy to take it away from somebody else. There's a lot of those people. And some people are aware that, you know, if you take liberty from this person, then tomorrow they may be taking liberty from you. That's where I fall down. But the point being that if you're going to have short-term thinking, it's not going to work in the long term, right? If you're focused on short-term, then you have no plan or goal for long-term. That's not a recipe for long-term success. It's a recipe for short-term success, but not long-term success. And you know what? The establishment, I don't think they care. I don't think they care about long-term success. You look at, I've seen a few things about this, Mitch McConnell's net worth. And you look at how much his net worth has increased in the past decade or so. In 2004, and this is all according to OpenSecrets.org, right, which gets their information from FEC filings and ethics filings and whatnot that are required for elected officials. In 2004, Mitch McConnell's net worth was somewhere between $1.7 and $4.4 million. That was his net worth. Everything he owned, everything combined together, it was worth somewhere between $1.7 and $4.4 million. And that fluctuation is because of property and different things you own. It's worth different things on different days and whatever. But $1.7 to $4.4 million in 2004. 7 years later, in 2011, which is the latest information they had available on OpenSecrets.org, Mitch McConnell's net worth had grown significantly to somewhere between $9.9 and $44.7 million. That is a huge increase. It's basically tenfold. How do you increase your net worth? And most of the growth that occurred happened between 2006 and 2010. And if you think about what happened between 2006 and 2010, for the most part, average people, their net worth went down. So how did that happen? Well, I don't want to surmise the exact details, but the short version is that those in power benefit from being in power. That's how you increase your net worth tenfold through times that are basically an economic downturn for everyone else. You know, who else's net worth went up by a multiple of 10 between 2006 and 2010? I'd love to find out how many people actually, decupled? I don't even know the right word for a tenfold increase in that period of time. I mean, it's insane. That's a huge amount of money. So why would Mitch McConnell want change? You know, Mitch McConnell is definitely the de facto leader of the Kentucky GOP and really is basically the de facto leader of the national GOP because there is no Republican president candidate, so he's the person in theory that's leading the highest elected offices in the country that are held by Republicans. Why would he want change? He's worth 10 times as much today as he was a decade ago. He's getting what he needs. He's looking out for number one. He's made his money. And that mentality in general causes so many freaking problems in our society. The I'm getting mine, man, and the get-rich-quick mentality. So many problems in our society are caused simply because of that mentality. And we're going to get back to that here. I'm going to take the break a little bit early here because Honestly, I'm out of coffee, and I didn't realize it until the show was about to start, so I put another pot on and came running back in here to get the show started. So I'm going to get a refill on the coffee, and we'll continue this discussion after the break. And if you'd like to call in about this or any of the other topics we've talked about tonight, you can, again, feel free to do so. It's area code 858-683-1326. And you're listening to Liberty Unbridled on the My View Matters Radio Network. Back in just a few minutes. Folks, you are listening to Liberty Unbridled on the My View Matters Radio Network. My name is Ken Ullman. I'm the host here every week, 7 p.m., and we'll take this opportunity to get our commercial break out of the way. If you'd like to advertise on this or any of the other My View Matters Radio Network shows, you can do so by emailing myviewmatters, all one word, at AOL.com, myviewmatters@AOL.com. The rates are very, very reasonable, and it helps support shows like this one and the other shows on the network. We have, for those who don't know, three shows on the network at this time. We run Sunday through Thursday at 7 p.m. You can go basically to the My View Matters Blog Talk Radio page and find any of the shows. And Springsteen has his show Monday through Wednesday, and then Dale the Truth has his on Thursday nights. So anyway, if you're interested in doing that, email myviewmatters@aol.com. The rates are very reasonable to do so. All right, with that said, we'll get back to it here. We've got, we were talking before the break about short-term thinking and all the things that it causes, the mentality of I'm going to get mine and the get-rich-quick mentality. It leads to so many problems, so many issues. You see in the corporate world, and this is an area where I think the left has, or what is traditionally known as the left, has at least a partial grasp of the problem. And they look at corporations where the CEOs get paid ridiculous sums of money. I mean, just stupid amounts of money to come in and run a company for 5 or 10 years and make tens of millions of dollars to do that. And, you know, that is kind of crazy. I mean, corporations, the CEOs never used to make money like that. CEOs never used to make giant amounts of money. Well, what is typically the political left fail to realize is what's actually driving that? What makes that happen? And essentially what makes that happen is a board of directors and shareholders. The shareholders are looking to make money on their investments. And the people who are these shareholders want the stock price to go up. And they want it to go up a lot. And you know what? If it goes up a whole lot, that's even better. Because then they can sell off part of their share. And, yeah, the stock might go back down. But they've sold out. They've made their money. They've banked their profits. And they repeat, you know, again, lather, rinse, repeat. So in many ways, it's us. We're the ones that drive it. When you have a 401k and these major fund houses, right, the big places like your Fidelity or your Edward Joneses or your, you know, your big 401k providers, they have the ability to put a ton of money into a stock. I mean, a ton of money into a stock, which would help a company. But to do that, they want to see growth, and they want to see good growth. And it doesn't necessarily need to be a 20-year thing. It can be just 5 years or even 3 years. And people that are younger, people my age and younger, are typically told we need to invest in very aggressive growth funds because we need to stay ahead of the curve when it comes to inflation, which is a whole other issue. But we're told to invest in these rapidly growing companies, these non-blue chip, the less stable companies. Well, why are they less stable? Well, in part because they're not as established, but also in part because they're doing things for today, not for tomorrow. And sometimes that works out and sometimes it doesn't. So it's interesting that businesses shop these different funds, right, to see what employees will want to invest in for their retirement. And so, and employees want something with a good rate of return. So really it's us, the employees, that are driving our companies to buy products, investment vehicles, through major firms because of a good rate of return. And those folks then seek out stocks and mutual funds that have great rate of returns. And how do you get those great rate of returns is through great profits. And, well, how do you get those big profits? Well, you get somebody in who's willing to come into the company, gut it to its core, do all kinds of crazy stuff to it to make it so that it's turning buku bucks for, you know, 2-3 years and ride it out as long as they can. Until eventually, you know, you can cut any company down to its core, and it'll survive for a short time. But it's interesting. What causes it is us. All of us. We all cause the problem. We all look to our own pocketbooks, and understandably so. You got to look out for number one, and then, you know, nobody else is responsible for you. But there was a really good article I read. I'll never remember the guy's name, the CEO for Whole Foods, talking about, you know, doing capitalism. Capitalism is fine, but you got to do it honestly. You know, you don't go out just to make the quick buck and forget everybody else in your path. You do it with honesty and integrity. And I really believe that that's the long term, right? Because if you're doing things honestly and with integrity, you build a rapport with your customers. You build a rapport with the community. And that means that, you know, you're going to have a stronger, what's the word I'm looking for? I'm having a terrible time tonight, folks. I apologize. I'm exhausted. You're going to have a support base, people that are loyal to your company. That's long-term thinking. Loyalty is long-term. The quick buck is short-term. Loyalty is long-term. And it's just funny because so many people just look for the quick buck. You have people that want to go out and do with a, I can't remember the term they use for it, the litigation lottery, where, you know, for a while there, everybody was looking for a reason to sue to make their millions and be able to retire. Yeah, right. That never works out, for the record. But that was the plan. They were going to go out, sue somebody, make $1 million, never work again. That's not the right attitude to have. That's a horrible attitude to have. Looking to sue someone? Lawsuits are supposed to be a mechanism by which restitution is at least in part, there's at least partial restitution when someone's been wrong. You shouldn't be looking to get wronged. I mean, that's just silly. I mean, think about that. I'm looking to get messed over by the man. Then I'll get to sue him. Huh? That's a weird mentality. So a lot of this comes down to us. And I think that's part of what has to happen here. There has to be an awakening, a understanding that what we do as individuals does have a greater effect. And that while I don't want to see a law passed to force us to go down any path, that we as free individuals should choose to do the right thing. We as free individuals should choose to do not what's going to earn us the quick buck, but what's going to benefit us in the long term. And that translates to so many things in real life. I mean, everything from marriage to you know, friendships and so many other facets of life. I mean, I could go, anybody can go strike up a quick friendship with somebody and then mess them over. I mean, wow, you know, that's not real friendship. You know, real friendship, your real friends are the ones that you have for a long time. It's genuine. You treat each other with respect. You treat each other right. You know, that's what makes a marriage work. We as people have to change our mindset. It can't be about the quick buck. It can't be forget that guy. He's not me. I don't care about him anyway. Being an individual, a responsible individual, in my opinion, is the goal. Now, that doesn't mean that I want a law saying that I'm responsible for you or you're responsible for me. That's the farthest thing from it because, first of all, as an individual person, I don't want to be forced to help anybody. And second of all, I know government gets involved, and it'll be the most messed up system ever. I'll be supporting something that'll be wrong. You know, they'll end up making us, I don't even know. I'm not even going to go down that route of trying to come up with some crazy, you know, straw man, whatever. The point being that we as individuals have to take personal responsibility for ourselves. And I think that a lot of liberty people do that. They get the personal responsibility side. But it's not just about owning up to your mistakes. It's about taking a higher road. It's about being a better person. It's about helping others help themselves. It's about just doing the right thing. It's easy. It's very, very easy to do the wrong thing. It's easy. And sometimes you won't ever get caught. Whatever. But I personally find, and it's just me speaking, I find that I feel that I am a better person by helping others and being genuine and not treating others like they're some lesser than me thing. I treat all people as if they're people. And I try to take into account their feelings. I try to take into account what they're thinking in their individual situations. And I'm not perfect. I'm not trying to say that I'm always, I'm not some dude that walks on water. I mean, that's not me. But I try. And I think that should be a personal goal. We should all try to be better people. Because if we live for today and not for tomorrow, we see what that leads to. We know what that leads to. Apply that principle to any other issue, and we see where this ends. We see for the Republican Party, you see a Republican Party that the leaders get rich and everybody gets screwed. You look at corporations. You see CEOs that come in, and really what they do is wreck a company, but they make tons of money in the meantime. Makes the shareholders happy, makes the investment houses happy, makes the companies and the employees happy because their 401ks are going up. But at the end of the day, we get the brunt of that too when we're the next guy on the chopping block getting axed. Another good example of short-term, long-term thinking, comparing the two. Kentucky's pension system. There's been a lot of media about the pension system and pension reform. I haven't read the individual bills. I've just been too dang busy. But I've seen bits and pieces. And there's a pretty good drumbeat going for true pension reform. Now, I don't suspect that this is actually going to solve the problem. I think we're probably going to end up with another Band-Aid. I've heard rumors that the legislative pension still isn't going to get touched, that this is only going to affect the other pensions in the state, because the legislative pension is very generous, and it's fine. The other pensions are all the ones that are in trouble. But in the 1980s, it was known in the 80s that our pension system was in trouble, that the current model, which is the same as it basically was in the 80s, was not sustainable over the long term. That there was no way that we were going to be able to continue this system the way it was. This was known in the 80s. But it was easier to kick it down the road. It was easier to think for today and not for tomorrow. And hey, all those legislators, they were getting a pension too. Well, certainly they didn't want to cut their own benefits, so they kicked the can down the road. You make a tweak here, a tweak there. Whatever. But, at its core, it's still the same thing. It's been kicked down the road. And in the 90s, it was, brought up again for a short time. And, same issues, same problems, same long-term prospect of failure. And again, politics, personal wealth, personal, agendas, saw the pension kicked down the road again. It's easier to kick it down the road than to solve the problem, but it's kicked down the road. And in the 2000s, again, we saw the same thing happen again. And that's when I started getting involved in politics, was in the 2000s, and I saw this. That, hey, we're talking about pensions, and wait, what? I was brand new to everything, so I didn't really understand what was going on when I mid-2000s when I started getting involved in politics and started looking at what was going on in Kentucky. And, everybody said, hey, this can't sustain itself. The current system is not going to work. It's going to fall on its face. This is bad. We need to do something about it. So they, again, tweaked it again, supposedly. And, they didn't really fix it, not at its core. They put some Band-Aids on it, said, look, we fixed it, and kicked the can down the road. And that brings us to today, where our pension system is in such critical condition that it's actually affecting other things in the state now. And so now we've got a bill. Once again, this will fix it. The House has already passed it. They said it's going to sail right through the Senate. Bashir, he can't. I mean, there's no way they can. If it passes the House and the Senate, there's really no way Bashir can veto it, at least not carte blanche. He might take the line item pen to it, but it'll pass. But does it really fix the problem? I don't know the answer to that yet because I haven't dug into the bill. And we haven't seen what the final amended thing will turn out to be. But we've been talking about the pension system and its failure for 30 years. Kick the can down the road because I'm getting mine today and I don't care. I'll be dead by the time this thing happens. Oh, look, we got a ruling from a court that says that no matter what, my pension's safe, so I don't care. Why would I change it now? All I got to do is ride through the system 5 more years and I get the full pension. Who cares? If the system falls apart in 10 years, I don't care. I've got mine in 5. And we've got a court ruling that says they have to pay me no matter what. And if it fails, then they're going to have to raise taxes. And I don't care. It's not my money. I'm getting mine. It's that mentality that's killing us. The short-term thinking. You can't think for today. You got to think for tomorrow. Life is not a game of checkers. It's a game of chess. Politics, anything. If you're only looking one move ahead as a small business owner, you're going to fail. I'll tell you that straight up. I've talked to many business owners about that. Business owners, when you're a small business owner, you're always, always looking 2-3 steps ahead. This is what I have today. This is what I want to have tomorrow. This is what I want in 5 years. This is what I want in 10 years. Here's how I'm going to get to all this. And here's the logical steps of how it's all going to go down. That's how businesses grow. That's how individuals, if you, God, I hate the interview question. What do you see yourself doing in 5 years? I don't know. I have a few goals. But, you know, when it comes to work, I plan to be working in 5 years. You know, again, I'm not saying I have all the answers. It's just a thought. You know, it's a belief that I have that we as people, as individuals, need to be looking a little further ahead than what's around the corner tomorrow. And we need to be looking out for a little bit more than what's in it for me. I mentioned this S&P article. And, you know, there was a big thing written up here in the Courier Journal about S&P, the Standard & Poor's just revised our financial outlook to negative. And they cited specifically our unfunded pension liabilities, which now apparently total more than $33 billion. I don't know about you, but I don't have $33 billion laying around in my back pocket. We can't find $2 billion to build a bridge. They want to put tolls on a bridge up here because they can't find $2 billion. Well, now it's almost $3 billion. Every time we hear the number, it goes up. But they can't figure out where to find $3 billion to build a bridge. Where are we going to find 11 times that amount of money? I don't know. It would have been nice if somebody had dealt with it, you know, a decade ago, and maybe that number would have been smaller. Or 2 decades ago when it would have been even smaller. Or 3 decades ago when it would have been probably tiny in comparison. They didn't think for them, for us today. They thought for them yesterday. They were looking at what was in it for them at the time, not what was in it for us tomorrow. And that's a problem. It's a big problem. Again, I don't know. I don't have the answers to all the questions, but I see the problem. I have my own ideas on some of this. You know, you're going to have to do something with the pensions. And unfortunately, because of the way the case law has come out, the only way that's going to be able to fix it at this point is a constitutional amendment to the state constitution. You can't. There's no other way to fix it now, because the courts have ruled that we, the taxpayers, are on the hook for coming up with this $33 billion in underfunded liabilities. There's 4.4 million people in the state. Let's just make it all. Let's make it easy math. So let's make it $40 billion, because it's probably more than 33 anyway. $40 billion and 4 million people. That's $10,000 a person. I'm a family of four. I don't have 40 grand to throw at this thing. Do you? Do you have 10 grand, 20 grand, 30 grand in your family to throw at it? I don't. How did they let it get so bad? Because the legislators made money off of it. They got theirs. And they left us on the hook. So the only way this is going to get fixed now is a constitutional amendment. And I'm sorry to say that probably the only way it gets fixed is going to be to screw over a bunch of people who were supposed to get a pension. And I hate that. I think it's horrible. But they didn't fix it 30-something years ago when they should have. Now what do we do? I don't have 40 grand laying around that I can throw at the state just for the pension, not to mention every other tax that we already have. I don't have 40 grand to give to the state. I don't know. What do we do? I think we're probably going to have to get rid of the pension system. And it's going to have to be some crafty way where at least the people in the system are going to get something. But I don't know. I haven't sat down and done the math. You know, there's multiple pension systems. I don't know. I wish they had come up with an answer 30, 40 years ago when this would have been a much easier question to answer. I don't know. But the point is, if they'd answered the question when it was easy to answer, we wouldn't be having this conversation today. Don't kick the can down the road. Got to face stuff head on and take it on and finish it. That's what I do. That's what I encourage you, everyone, to do. You know, when you mask a problem, it just gets worse. And so, wrapping up the show here, we got a few minutes left. And speaking of masking a problem, saw an article right before the show started about Kentucky and Interstate 66 and Interstate 69. Now, many people don't know about Interstate 66 and 69. Interstate 69 has been actually signed through most of Kentucky now, and it's over in western Kentucky. Interstate 69 is the NAFTA superhighway, for those that are unfamiliar with 69 in its numerical form. You know, if everybody remembers that debate from the 90s, the NAFTA superhighway, and people said it didn't exist and whatever, it did. It was Interstate 69. It's supposed to go from the tip of Texas all the way up to the top of Michigan now. And part of that runs through Kentucky, runs through western Kentucky. And the way the road systems work is that when these guys build highways and interstates, a lot of times they'll use the right-of-ways that are already there in place, because it's cheaper, it's easier. There's already a road there. And so Kentucky, in large part, developed our parkway system to make sure that we would get the corridors for these highways. Because all they do at the federal level at first is say, yeah, we kind of know that it wants to run through this general area. A state will build the highways in a way that ensures that the route will go the way they want it to. And there's a number of good reasons for that. There's a number of not so good political, you know, cronyism reasons for that. But the point is that Interstate 66 is supposed to run through basically along southern Kentucky and through the mountains up to Pikeville, from Pikeville across the bottom, goes into Bowling Green across, Cumberland Parkway. And then across the bottom and out. 69 runs, and they've already signed it. I'm going to mess up. I think that's the Natcher, but it could be the Penny Rile. I always get confused on the parkway names. But part of the Western Kentucky Parkway signed. They've got it heading out south to to the south end of the state, and they've got it up to 66 or 69 runs up to Henderson, where they're going to have to build a new bridge, like, you know, we do need in Northern Kentucky, to connect it to what is now signed as I-164 in Evansville, Indiana, and then up to 64 and on up to Indianapolis. So that's the route that they're planning to take with it. And we've spent millions of dollars in Kentucky, of Kentucky money. A lot of Kentucky money went into this because technically they're not federal interstates. The highways are there. I-66 is never going to happen. It's cost too much money to cut a new interstate through I-66 costs too much money to run through the mountains. I-69 is there, and it's built to the same quality as Interstate 71. I mean, you have to go back in time and understand that the standards have increased significantly. I-71 is grandfathered in because it was built back during an era when it was allowed to be that way. But the parkways, which are exactly the same type of construction with the smaller shoulders and whatnot, are not grandfathered in, so they can't qualify to be put on officially. And apparently we're on the hook now to make I-69 official through Kentucky of dumping another $800 million into the pieces of parkways that make up what is I-69. Well, that's a huge amount of money. You know, again, we keep talking about all these bridges we need to build and all this different money and all this different things, you know, and we've got roads. And understand, folks, and I think everybody knows, but in case you don't, I'm a huge proponent of roads. I mean, roads are transportation. It's economic opportunity. It's mobility. It's individual freedom. It's the ability to move. Interstates are great, but we've spent a lot of money on these things. And they're not going anywhere. You know, there's a piece of I-66 that's actually signed I-66, although I haven't seen that. I think that's pretty interesting. From London to Somerset. And I'm going to look that up after the show because I'm a road geek and self-described as such. But we spent a lot of money on projects. And just like that parkway, I think it's Cumberland Parkway, that doesn't even get all the way over to I-75. It runs out of Bowling Green into, as was jokingly said to me, a park. Well, great, it's an interstate to a park. Well, that's silly. You know, if you're going to do a project, finish it. We've got all this money invested, finish it. You know, get the economic benefit of it existing. The Western Kentucky Parkway is way, way, way overbuilt for what we actually need. I mean, I've been on that thing many, many hours, and not a lot of traffic on the Western Kentucky Parkway. Got to do things smarter. That's really what it comes down to. Got to look long-term. Got to finish projects. You know, when you start them, finish them. Do it smarter. Do it cheaper. Do it better. There are a lot of problems with our state, and there's a lot of things that can be done to fix them. Common sense things. But politics blocks it. Political fiefdoms block it. Short-term thinking. And I'm going to get mine. Block it. We've got to have a new approach. We need a way to get people to realize that the old system is broken. It's time for a new system. It's time to do things better. It's time to do things smarter. Folks, we're at the end of the show. Thanks for tuning in. Tune in again next week at 7 o'clock for another edition of Liberty Unbridled on the My View Matters Radio Network. Until then, have a good week.